stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Conklin?
Here.
Brunch?
Here.
Needhammer?
Here.
Page?
Here.
Salomon?
Here.
Quorum present?
Thank you. Moving on to any citizens' comments on non-agenda item. Maybe you, Chris.
I'm here to listen, not talk.
All right. And item four, meeting with financial consultant Andy Campbell. Right?
Many of you may recall that as part of our SAW grant, one of the things we were going to do is a financial analysis of the wastewater fund to look at, you know, issues involving it and just to see how we are doing financially. And Andy came at the end of the process and presented a report to staff with regards to it. And it was a very informative report. It was easy to understand and take away information on it. And based on that, we came to the City Commission and recommended that we go a step further, even though it wasn't going to be covered by the grant, and have a similar study done with our water fund to see what condition that was in. To be candid, the water fund was always one of the two funds we were more concerned about between the water and the wastewater. The wastewater always seemed to be pretty solid financially, and Andy's report will bear that out and show it. And then, but we thought it would really be helpful, especially if we're planning future infrastructure projects. If we're going to be tearing up a road and we want to do the sanitary sewer lines, we wanted to know if we had an ability to do something with this water system as well, or if we needed to look at adjusting rates with regards to either one of those. So he completed that study as well, too, and you'll get the results on that, which are, I believe, are pretty good. Based on those two processes, as Andy was kind of finishing up the water project, I kind of asked him to stay after a little bit after our meeting, brought Barb in, and we started talking about options with regards to the marina project and possible expansions on that as well. As you know, we've been, you know, kind of talking about, you know, how do we break it into phases? Do we look at grant funding? Do we forgo the grant funding and try and do it all at one time? All these different types of things. And had some really good discussions on a pretty much an ad hoc basis just that one afternoon after he did the water study report for us. And we thought, well, this would be helpful for us to get some additional information with regards to that. It's been a major project. We've been looking to move forward for quite some time. And so he has some preliminary information that he's gone over with Barb and with our engineers, Abin Marsh, to come up with some scenarios that we could look at and have some discussions on that, maybe plant some seeds for next steps, either as part of the budget process or somewhere along on that as well, too. So, again, Andy comes to us from Baker Tilly. As he mentioned earlier, his office is in East Lansing. It came to us as part of the SAW project. We've been real impressed with everything he's touched so far, and we wanted to share that with you so you can kind of get a little bit more insight as to where we think we are and where he thinks we are as well. So without any further ado, I don't know, Andy, if you want to introduce yourself, take a minute and introduce yourself a little bit more formally to the commission or just get started.
Appreciate it. Again, Andy Campbell with Baker Tilly. My boss and I, Tom Traciak, work with about 400 communities in the state of Michigan, so we cover the whole state. And we were brought in to the city initially by Larry Fox from C2AE as part of the SAW grant process. So the SAW grant is officially done for the city. It was done as of the end of last year. And we were brought in to do the financial portion of the grant to satisfy the grant requirements and also do an actual analysis on the sewer fund that the city can use going forward. Won't talk too much about the SAW grant, but essentially in terms of where the city stands in the grant process, Eagle is out of the game now. So with the grant being done at the end of last year, it's really back into the city's hands and what do you want to do in the future. So that's what we're going to be talking about today is our analysis on the sewer fund side, capital improvements that Larry and his team have targeted, and what does the city want to do going into the future with the sewer fund. What we found, you all were actually round four, so there were three rounds before you, obviously, and what we found from those three rounds, the initial concern was really that Eagle was going to come in, if I talk in acronyms a lot, Eagle is the enforcement arm behind water and sewer in the state. So they're the state arm that enforces water and sewer regulations. Eagle ran the SAW grant, and the concern at the time of the grant coming out in 2013-ish was that they were going to take that information and basically come down on communities for all their, if you had any deficiencies or enforce capital improvements. If you targeted that you need to do this pipe in 2021, the worry was that they were going to come back and start enforcing that and not allow you to make the decisions yourself. That has not been the case. So it has been very good results for every community that we've worked with, that we've gotten feedback from. So I expect it to be the same. It really was a really nice grant. It was 90% grant money to help you figure out the sewer system and look at the issues going forward for the next 20 years that the community could face. So we'll talk about the sewer side first. The overall, and I'll pass out the analysis here in a second, but the overall is that your community is in a lot better position than most. We are on, it's up to about 140 of these SAW grants now. We've completed about 120. The reality is that the reason that Eagle did this is because communities a lot of times didn't have any clue what was going on in their systems. For better or for worse, I mean, this was the solution for Eagle's desires to try to get communities to better plan. There are a lot of communities that strictly operated on if it breaks, we fix it type mentality, and not planning for the future. And Eagle was getting tired of that mindset of anytime something bad happens, we get some sewage going into the river, or we get an emergency borrowing for money that they need to borrow from the state to fix it. So this was their solution to try to get people to plan better. The reality is that your community is not in that position, which has been good. You've done the planning. You got a good team that's handling the system well. It really is just a checkup for you all in terms of the sewer side and then turning it into water. How do you want to operate the system going forward, knowing that there are capital improvements coming up, but the reality is that with very minimal increases, if any, on water and sewer, you can handle everything that's targeted. So let's talk about the sewer side. Any questions before I start?
When you say you were brought in, so do you work for the state to verify the grant? Or?
Nope, we are just a consultant. We were brought in because your engineer, who is Larry Fox from C2AE on the SAW grant, they brought us in to help with the financial side. So we are just a strictly consulting company that helps with finances across the state. So we do water sewer rate studies and bond issuance. But Larry, we work, C2AE, who is, again, your engineer, we work with them. Yeah, there should be enough.
Yep.
We work on a lot of their SAW grants and a lot of other projects with them. So they brought us in, introduced us to you guys. So
is your fee being covered by
yep.
the SAW grant?
The sewer one, yes.
Through Larry Fox or through C2E?
Correct. Yeah. The water one, no. But the sewer one, yes. Yep.
Can I recall that he's a sub-consultant under C2AE with regards to experts in the area. And you may recall that we brought to the City Commission hiring them directly for the water fund.
A couple months ago?
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Just back up just a minute. Like, the stuff that fed into this, we did all that stuff where we looked at, we took videos of the sewer to check its condition and some other stuff.
That's all part of the SAW grant.
So it's that basis understanding what our system is today that advised you on the financial project.
Correct. So basically, basically the whole step in the process was Larry and his team work with Mark primarily on getting the engineering side and the cammering, the pipes, and the whole self-assessment of the system. And then they come up with a capital improvement plan that says, based on our assessment of the system, here is the issues, and here is when we think you should address these issues, and how much it's going to cost. They turn that over to us, and then we do a financial projection saying, okay, this is how you can afford to do all those capital improvements that you're targeting. And then you do scenario 2 and 3, depending on if you want to move stuff back or address other options or whatever it may be from there. So what you'll see in this analysis is there's actually two different scenarios. Again, your community is in a much better position than most. Most of the time when we do these sovereign analyses, you're looking at, I would say the average rate increase has been around 10 to 15%, and then inflationary after that. What you guys are going to see in the two scenarios is very minimal rate increases. It's 1%, really. We'll get you whatever you need to do on the capital side that's currently projected. Obviously, we got to make sure that assumption is out there that can't control anything that's not in the summary, but anything that they're currently looking at and doing on the capital side, and then also the second scenario is looking at the possibility of extending sewer to customers that do not currently have public sewer. So, and we'll talk about what that means, why you might do it, why you might not do it, and what the differences are there. So,
if I could just jump in, there's a piece of this equation that we're not talking about today, because there. The SAW grant basically covered two of our systems, which is the sanitary sewer and the storm sewer area. We don't have a separate fund or mechanism outside of our road funds and general funding that currently supports any improvements that we might need with regards to storm sewer. There aren't any huge deficiencies or anything like that I'm aware of. I don't know if you recall any, there's issues around town that we have to work with, and obviously with the higher lake levels, the storm system operates differently than it did a few years ago when we had a lot less back pressure on it. So anyway, we're not talking about the storm sewer today, but again, I just want to remind you that that was all part of the SAW grant analysis as well, too.
So did you review all that video, Mark?
Not all of it. Scott has it under his computer. We can look at every line, so yeah. I just got sections. I looked at sections where they had were having difficulties or wanted to show me certain things. So, and then they gave us a printout of areas. We have the map and then points between here, so we can go pick up that portion of the sewer and look at it and see what needs to be done or which areas they think we need to hit the best.
I have talked to Larry about putting possibly a greatest hits compilation or something like together, or maybe the most interesting, because a lot of it is just, you're just going down a straight white tube and it's like you're following the light or something like that, but where they do have breaks or, roots coming through it or something of that nature, we might want to take a look at that because we don't see it. I mean, it's all underground. It's out of sight, out of mind a lot of times, so.
Music score.
Yeah. Well, I would expect no less from you, Sally.
So in the first couple of pages here in the analysis, I'm just going to highlight some major numbers. If you have any questions, obviously, feel free to stop me, but we'll get to the full analysis here pretty quickly.
And if there's anything you need us to focus on, I can put it up on the screen as well, too.
Okay. So page one, this is directly from the city's audits. So this is the sewer fund audits for 16 through 19. Really what I want to concentrate on is the top line, which is the cash and investments. One of the things that you can see, and this is just our initial check, really, is how healthy is the system. You can see that from 2016 to 2019, you're adding about $400,000 every year in the cash and investments line, and ended 2019 year end with about $3.4 million. We'll talk about what that number means, how healthy that is in terms of metrics, but really the baseline you can see is you're adding cash every single year, so as long as you're maintaining the system, just because you add cash doesn't mean everything else is good, but that is obviously a good metric to see that you're adding cash to the system and not draining down. Page 2, again from your audits, so 16 through 19 audits. As we would expect on most smaller community systems, except for 18, which was an anomaly, your revenues are pretty stable. You're a little over $1.1 million. The charges for services at the end of 2019 year end was $1.16 million. So everything is pretty stable in the system. That's what we talked about in the working group meetings as well, is that there is nothing major going on, pretty status quo system. The real one big variance is Boyne Mountain that we'll talk about, but other than that, everything's pretty stable. Page three is,
So like under the personnel on page two, where it was 232 and then it's 111,518 for 2019.
So one of the things that we don't advise people to look at on the audits for these last couple of years is the operating expenses, because what has happened is because you had your SAW grant, those numbers are going to be skewed by the grant numbers. So when you book the revenue for the SAW grant, it's being booked into non-operating revenue usually, and then the expenses are getting booked in there. So anytime like Mark and his team went out there to, or you hired a subcontractor to do televising or something, that was booked into the operating expenses. So you got to be careful in the next few years about looking at those numbers in the audit, because those are going to include reimbursable expenses from the grant. So that's why it's going to be jumping around until you get to more steady years on the out years, is because of the grant numbers. On page three, this is directly from your budgets. So switching over to the budget history for 18 and then 19-20 budgets. The one number to concentrate on is at the very bottom right. It's highlighted in yellow, $569,000. This number, so the difference between what your test year is, which is in rate making, it's a normalized operating budget. So given a typical year, it's hard to define what a typical year is sometimes, but a typical year, your operating expenses are projected to be about $570,000. The reason it's different from that compared to your other years is because SAW grant expenses were built into your budgets, just like the audits, and you had some capital improvements in there as well. So this test year just takes into account what do we need to bring in just to run the operations of the system. So we'll talk about debt in a second here, and we're going to talk about capital improvements down the line. But in order to run the system effectively in today's dollars, we need to bring in about $570,000. The multiplier column on the right-hand side just is basically inflation. You can think of it as inflation. And the main thing to know there is that this is an analysis that goes out many years. $570,000 is going to be good for today, but 10 years from now, most likely your budget's not going to be $570,000. Costs go up, expenses go up. We take that into account with our analysis. Moving on to the debt side. So page four is the debt on the sewer system. The total payment is about $520,000 for the next few years. If you look at the very bottom, though, you'll see that, and as I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with it, Boyne Mountain reimburses for 43.5% of that. So this is not all on the city. Boyne Mountain pays for just under half of that issue, but ultimately it is the responsibility of the city and Boyne Mountain to pay that, and that's built into the analysis. One thing to note, though, is that, and this is something we talked about at the working group meeting, this is one of the reasons why the finances are going to be very good on the out years, is that you have what is essentially for your payments after the Boyne Mountain reimbursement gets taken out. You're looking at about $300,000 a year that's on the city budget. And then in the last year, it goes down a little bit to about $250,000 or so. But that is going to open up, obviously, after 2026. So that's one of the big reasons why looking at your finances is that you have this, what is essentially a really big part of your budget right now for this debt payment, $300,000 compared to an operating budget of $570,000. That's a third of your budget is tied up in debt right now. So with that coming off in 2026, that's a huge opportunity to look at the capital improvements that potentially need to be financed or cash funded, in your case, to have that amount open up in your budget is a good thing to have. I mean, there are a lot of communities that would be very happy if they could look at this and see that they're already funding this amount of debt and the projections are showing you don't need to do that anymore. You're going to have that money to use to whatever else you need to use on the sewer system in 6 years' time. So,
was there any thought of just lowering rates too? I mean, do you get into that at all?
Yep. We can talk about that. Remind me if I don't get back to it though. Yep, we can talk about that. So let's talk about page 5. This is the cash flow analysis with no extensions. And actually, let me reset a little bit and talk about the difference between the two analyses for a second here. So when you talk about the two differences, there's two analyses. One is on your current system, and then one is doing a strategic, basically timeline of filling in the gaps in your system of where some streets or part of the community doesn't have sewer for one reason or another. Honestly, I don't know how some of them develop, because it's kind of like randomly there's like just one strip of houses that doesn't have it and everybody else has it around it. But
it's before all of our time.
Yeah.
Before,
okay. All right. So,
and he keeps looking up here. And you want to reference at all?
Yeah, I can just for instance,
bring it closer. We might want to take it over by that window, Andy.
Okay. Oh, you could just
take the whole thing.
Yep. Excuse me. I'm a little savvy here. So, it isn't untypical to see, but one of the things that Larry at C2AE worked with was all these red areas are areas that are not served by, I believe this is the, this is
sanitary.
Just want to make sure. So this is all unserved parcels in the city that do not have sanitary sewer right now. I would assume it's not untypical, but it is kind of interesting, I guess you could say, at times where you have just random little blocks with everybody else surrounding has sanitary sewer. And then there's some bigger parcels too. Like these ones are more agricultural, so I can understand that, but a lot of the ones that are inside the city, it is not very typical to see that. It just had to be city history. I would think that at one time, this is just pure guess, but where we sometimes see it is that if the city specially assessed for sewer at one time, and they got a lot of pushback from the property owners on First Street to special assess them for sewer because they all had new septic tanks, they might have just said, let's just remove the people from First Street and we'll go do the sewer elsewhere. That's what sometimes happens, is that if there's a lot of political pushback to service in one street or another because of one reason or another, the price or the whatever, new septics, then sometimes they just carve that out. So we do see it every now and then, but you'll see that there's just little sections here and there that don't have sanitary sewer. So this is the difference between the two analyses, and this is something that is going to be a political decision about what happens in the future for these two scenarios and those customers. I will tell you the typical case of what communities decide is because they don't have the finances that you have. The typical is that if those five houses, I don't know what street this is, but I'm going to call it First Street, in Area 5 don't have sewer, then they would, one of two things. They would special assess them, so those five property owners could come to the city and say, we're ready to join the public sewer system, specially assess us for the cost, and we split the cost. The problem that you're going to have with these little areas is that it's most likely not going to make economical sense for them to do that, because you could have $100,000, $150,000 pipe to get three houses online. Are they going to want to pay $25,000, $30,000 to connect to the system? The other way to do it is to force connection. And if you're within, I always forget this number, I think it's 200 feet of a line. That's most the way most ordinances are written. If you're within 200...
100.
100?
Yeah.
Okay, so if you're within 100 feet of the a public sanitary line, you can force connection and get them online. The reality is that these areas have, from our take, I mean, they no one's been knocking down your doors from those areas, so they haven't been problems so far. So it's really going to be a discussion about what happens in the future when these areas do have a problem. One of the engineers that we talk to a lot downstate says there are only two types of septics. There's new septics, and there's septics that are going to fail. So when you look at these systems, the one caveat that I would say that's not typical for most communities that you do have to think about is this big blue thing right here. And the reality is that these are all being served by septics that you don't really know what's going on with. There are a lot of septics. I mean, we go around the state doing a lot of public special assessments or new public systems or whatever it may be, because septics aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing. We've had a couple horror stories, but most of them are just everybody sees the need to get people on public sewer because it's more sanitary. You don't have to worry about septics failing or cracking or whatever it may be. The decision that you guys either now or in the future are going to have to make is, how do you treat those customers? Are you willing to take a financial loss on the sewer system to get those customers online? Because most of the time when we looked at these analyses with Larry and his team of saying, okay, it's going to cost X amount of money to get Area 5 on the line, it's going to cost X amount of money to get Area 1 on the line, I would say it was, I honestly don't remember the numbers, but it didn't seem to me like any of them were like less than $20,000, $25,000 per parcel. So the big question is going to be, are you willing to do some sort of project to where the sewer fund is incurring some or all of the cost to get those people online when and if their septics fail, when their septics fail? The reality is that this will probably, I mean, it will come a point where you're going to have to decide this at some point, I would think pretty soon, because there will come a time when the health department will not allow people to continue doing septic if they're in, if they have access to public sewer, that is that close. So these, especially like when you look at these pockets right here, you're going to have, I mean, I would be surprised if somebody's septic fails in the next 5 or 10 years and the public health department says, yeah, go build another septic field on your property, even though you're 20 feet from a public sewer line. So that's something to keep in mind, and this is what we're going to talk about, is what does the finances look like in terms of that discussion. What happens on the finances when you look at, we just maintain our own system that is currently out there, and then what happens if we decide as a public body to start servicing those people and not specially assess them, only charge them the connection charge. We'll talk about that in a second here, but I don't want to confuse you too much right now.
So does this mean that that whole neighborhood is without, is on septic in this whole neighborhood here?
Yep.
And they're the closest to the sewage treatment.
Is there some history of how that is? I mean, when you have a whole neighborhood like that.
I would be interested. Why, do you know why there's a couple that, like, area, this one right here, is only 100 yards from your treatment plant and is not served?
Yeah, we have two lines that go to the wastewater treatment plant out by the airport. One is, and remember, the wastewater treatment plant's only been there since the early, 2006, 2008, whenever it was built?
Yeah, the plant's there.
I mean, the lagoons were there, but the whole plant wasn't there. There's two pipes that run up and down East Main, and those are both, it's a force main bringing all the sewage up there to be treated, and there's the line of clean water coming back down to be discharged. There isn't any, those pipes are nice to have there, but they don't help in facilitating serving those neighborhoods. I mean, the plant could be, it could have been still on the waterfront where it was originally when I came to town versus out there. It's just, as far as they're concerned, it's remote. It doesn't have the right type of pipes.
Which side of East Main are the pipes on?
I want to say that they're on the south side.
South side. Yep.
After the mine pipe.
Yeah.
Closer to the Christmas house.
Yeah, the sewer stops just prior to your house. Yeah. That's right at the top of the hill.
So,
go ahead.
There has to be some ratio that the more that you would add on with future growth, the more, the lesser it is per person.
So, when you talk about that, you're talking about in the terms of connections, I think, then, connection fee.
Yeah, so if you took that neighborhood and had 40 homes, it's going to be cheaper per home than a neighborhood that has 10 homes.
Two different discussions, potentially. That's when you get into discussions about special assessment versus just connection charge. And that's where we're getting into the second analysis, and to jump ahead a little bit, is that the city has the option to, if you were a typical community and you didn't have the finances you had right now, and what would typically happen is that, yes, you would say, okay, if this community, or this neighborhood with 40 houses wants to get connected on, and it's going to cost, to make it easy, $400,000, so $10,000 per, then we're going to assess you $10,000 per parcel. And it's that easy. Our cost is $400,000. There's 40 parcels. It's $10,000 for everybody, and you assess without the option to say no. It's just a special assessment. And if there's 10 with the same cost because of the geography or whatever it may be, and there's 10 parcels in neighborhood B, and it's $400,000, then those property owners have to pay $40,000.
Got it.
The difference, since you have the finances that you do, that you have the option to do, is actually do a different approach and say the city could, and using the current sewer funds, build those pipes at their own cost, and then you would only charge the parcels a connection fee, which is the same for everybody, to connect on, and it's going to be significantly less. I don't know what your connection fee is.
Just over $1,500.
Yeah, there we go.
Pre-utility.
Yeah, so if you're talking sewer, you would basically build the $400,000 pipes for both neighborhoods in that scenario. So $800,000 would come out of the sewer fund, and you would get 50 times 1,500, so $75,000 when those parcels connect. So that's the big question, is are we willing to take sewer fund money to extend the system and build the system to service everybody, knowing that we will not recover all of our costs? So, yeah.
Two comments. I mean, we've struggled with this issue about how do we expand the system for quite some time. Because, frankly, we have the capacity in our wastewater treatment plant. It was basically designed to serve the entire city plus the 20-year needs for Boyne Mountain. So we have the capacity at the plant, and we also have the capacity on our water production side with the wells that we have to serve basically the entire community as well. So we have the capacities. What we just don't have is the distribution or the collection systems to get that final mile from the house to the plant, either to the water system or to the sewer system. So, one, just realize that we have the capacities there. When he talks about the debt rolling off for the wastewater treatment plant, I mean, we have some regular maintenance issue. We just approved, like, blower motors and things like that. But the plant's in excellent shape. I mean, it's got a lot of life left in it. It's not like we're going to have to replace another plant and, you know, build another plant in 5 or 10 years or something like that. I mean, that thing's got decades left on it. So it's in, there is not another big expense like when we built the plant to have to replace the plant coming up anytime soon. And then the last thing I wanted to bring up at this point was, it was either special assessments or developers that have basically extended the system over recent years. Probably the most recent large-scale extension was for Harborage Heights off of Division Street, when they planted that subdivision or that neighborhood. Only very few homes have been put into that, but they've got all the water mains and the sanitary sewer mains in there to service that neighborhood. That's, aside from special assessments, that's the standard way that a lot of communities get their systems extended.
So to go along with that, Glenwood Beach, Young State Park, Somerset, and Boyne Mountain are actually moneymakers for us. And they were special assessments or financed privately by Boyne Mountain.
I can't speak specifically with regards to Glenwood Beach and Young State Park. That happened before my time. Obviously, those Young State Park is a huge economic engine for the area, as is Boyne Mountain as well too. And Boyne Mountain, as was mentioned before, they're paying 43.5% of the plant's cost, so they help offset that. And there's some operational efficiencies by having some more sewage as well too. With regards to Somerset Point, with their extension of the force main out to Somerset, basically, it brought sanitary sewer service from the intersection of Division and Front Street out to the west city limit along Lakeshore there, which we calculated was more than a $500,000 benefit to the city, because we got that infrastructure. It's all our infrastructure now, and provided a lot more service for those customers that were there that, you know, unless they went through a special assessment, never would have gotten served. So we looked at that as the benefit for the community on that one.
Is it fair to say that they're money makers, or rather that they help to contribute to our operating, helping our operating costs?
Probably the operating costs, because there's not a lot. Somerset,
flow.
From there, basically, from Somerset into town, there's probably only six houses along the whole lakeshore that are hooked into the sewer. Their flows are 800-900 gallons a day, so they're not a lot. We're not getting a lot of money from the water bill out there, their sewer bill. So,
in addition to the financial issue, though, with regards to Somerset, is the good of basically taking a number of those six homes or whatever other ones the health department future judges that are along that strip off septics that aren't inspected, that have high groundwaters. So by putting that force main out there, even outside the city, there's an additional benefit, which is it helps protect the environment.
Yeah.
Well, and Glenwood Beach, too.
Yes, exactly, because that's, a lot of swampy land over there.
Because along the lakeshore, the health department's already had two people hook up because they wouldn't approve their new septic tanks.
On Somerset, Strip.
Since it went in?
Yeah.
And they declined it originally, now they have.
Yeah, and one of them was, you mentioned that most recent one, the vacation?
Yeah, it was at Airbnb. Actually, the reason the health department, they go on the website and they were looking for Airbnbs, and they saw this house that was advertised on Lakeshore Drive, and they looked at their records, and it was only supposed to be designed for 3 bedrooms, but they were saying it could hold up to 18 people or something. They had 8 or 10 bedrooms there, and
they got caught.
And so the health department said, you either got to quit your Airbnb or connect to the sewer. They just connected to the sewer, because that the cost of that was made in 2 weeks there at their Airbnb prices.
Sure.
And, of course, that would not have overtaxed their septic system at all.
But we win.
Yeah.
In multiple ways, yes.
So let's talk about page 5, and we'll talk about a couple of metrics and what the current system holds. So backing up from the extensions for a second here and what your current system looks like in the analysis. Let's go through 2019-20, so the current fiscal year, where we stand right now. So the current rate is highlighted in yellow. This is the ready to serve charge per quarter of $33. That is for what is essentially your residential customers. If we bill on meter equivalents, so if you have a commercial with a 2-inch meter, it's going to be more than that. But Your typical homeowner is going to be $33 per quarter for the ready-to-serve charge. Again, just talking the sewer portion of the bill. We'll get to water in a second. And then your usage charge is $4.73, which brings your typical homeowner a few lines down, as highlighted in blue, $96.86. So one of the things to talk about real quick is your typical homeowner's bill of $96.86 per quarter. So you're looking at $32 and change per month. Again, a lot of this, and we talked about this in the working group, a lot of this is really good news. When you look at, we don't like to do comparisons because there's always differences between systems. You could have a lagoon system like your system versus a plant system. Mechanical plant system. You could have a system that has, like Coopersville down by Grand Rapids, has a very large dairy operation that carries a lot of the expenses and brings in a lot of revenue. That's going to be different than your system. You could have a system that is 50-50 or whatever it is, people that are here year-round and snowbirds, and or you could have a system that is 100% residential. There are a million different reasons. Another one actually is that you could have gotten a huge grant back in the 70s and 80s from the EPA to build your system versus other communities that didn't. So there's a million reasons why rates are different. But the reality is, and what we understand, is that your customers don't care about that. They are looking at it from the sense that I have water and sewer from a city. That's the same as my system downstate where I live in Metro Detroit. It's the same system to them. If they live in Metro Detroit and they have a home in Boyne City for the summer, they're not seeing the differences between the Great Lakes Water Authority and Boyne City infrastructure. They're seeing it as, I have two bills, which one's smaller? So the reality is that we do look at it in terms of the state of what a typical bill is. And for what we see on the sewer systems, a typical bill for monthly bill is $35 to $55 per month is the mid-range. So if you're below $35 per month, you're in the low category. If you're above $55, you're in the high category. That's just based on numbers that we see consulting to everyone that we talk to. So you're just in the low category right now, $32 per month for sewer service. Another good really metric for your community, because you've been able to run the system with that low of a cost. Another reason that we strongly tell people you got to be careful about that is that we have communities that are charging the same as you at $32 a month, but they're facing millions upon millions of dollars of capital improvements in the next few years because they haven't been maintaining their system on that cost. So the reality is that you have been doing a good job. The cash flow is good. The cash balances are really good, which we'll talk about in a second. The rates are really good. Everything's in a good position to address what you actually want to do for the next 10, 20 years on the system. Going down the line on 2019-20, you'll see a purple box. So your typical revenues are that what we talked about $1.17 million. You're getting a reimbursement from Boyne Mountain for part of the debt, which is the teal box at $226,000. Which brings your total revenues in at about $1.4 million in Peach. The operating expenses, with the number we talked about earlier, $570,000, gets taken out. Your net operating revenue is $827,000. You got current debt just below that of $520,000 per year, which means that before we talk about capital, you're currently running about a positive $300,000 cash flow. So on any given year, prior to when the debt falls off, you're already running a $300,000 positive cash flow for capital improvements on the sewer side. So basically, from here on out, for the next 6 years, you're going to have about $300,000 to play with until the debt falls off. And then once the debt falls off, you're going to have another $300,000 or so of open cash flow to look at the capital side, extensions, et cetera. Before we get to the out years, let's talk about your cash balance, and I talked about the metrics real quick. So when we look at cash balance, this is one of the things that the reason, again, why we showed a scenario of looking at these extensions was because the cash balance is in a really good position. The operating expenses of $570,000, our metric that we look at for a community is we would throw up red flags if you get below 6 months, and that is typically on larger systems. So if your system expenses are like $5 million or something per year, if you've got $2.5 million in the bank, that's a good cash balance. There's no real concerns usually. When you have a system as small as yours, I would start saying 1 to 2 years, you got to be careful. So when you look at your operating expenses of $570,000, if you started spending down your cash where it got below $1 million, I would start saying, okay, is there a plan for the future here, or do we need to adjust rates because cash is going down significantly? The reality is that when you talk to an auditor, let's say a general fund, they're going to tell you, oh, you don't need more than 3 or 4 months typically in your general fund. That's fine for general funds, because if something happens on the general side, you got a computer that you got to fix for $2,000 or $3,000, no problem. On the sewer side, it's not the case. And what you'll see in a second is there's a big cost coming up in 3 years that we're going to talk about. That's the stuff you have to be concerned about on sewer side, is if a force main breaks, you don't want to have to come to me or somebody else and do an emergency, get out the market as soon as possible, no matter what market conditions are looking like, and borrow money as soon as we can because we didn't have enough money saved for capital improvements. So that's why when we talk about your community and the size that it is, having what you have right now is $3.4 million in cash is good. It's not too much. It's not too little. When you look at your overall cash balance, it's in a good position. But the reality is that you got to keep more than our typical metric of 6 months, because sewer funds are costly to maintain. So let's talk about the next couple years and what we're looking at and that we talked about in the working group to address rates and then capital. So we'll start at the capital first. What you'll see is near the very bottom for the 2020-21 fiscal year and the 2 years after that is there's a couple highlighted gray boxes that have capital improvements in them. For the next couple years, the system, from my understanding from Larry, is that the system is in really good shape, but there are a couple of things that need to be addressed. And I flipped to the page here. With the big one that's in 2022-23, that's $2.1 million, is the main pump station force main replacement, which I'm assuming is that Piper we're talking about that goes to the plant. So
the lake all the way up to the lagoon, yeah.
Yep. So I would assume that that is probably your highest risk of failure as well, that if something happens to that pipe, it's not good. So Larry and his team, I'm sure with your help, Mark, address that in the first couple years of replacing that pipe to make sure that we're good for the future, hopefully. There are also other costs as well, and there a lot of it is just spot repairs, manhole repairs, pump station improvements, just your basic stuff that happens on sewer systems. But that is the major cost in 22-23 that we're looking to cash fund. The main overall, in that you look at this analysis, and the analysis you'll see in a second, is that we're looking at cash funding all the improvements. So there is no debt projected in the future right now, based on the numbers we're getting from C2AE and Mark on the capital side. But you are in a good position to address all these capital needs in the next 10 years plus with what you'll see is a 1% rate increase for the next few years. What we talked about in the working group was that we don't think that you should turn off rate increases. The reality is that you have a lot of unknowns in the next 10 or so years, including whether or not that replacement comes in at $2.1 million or not is a big question mark. I'm sure you might have heard, construction costs have gone through the roof. Unfortunately, with, I mean, fortunately for the economy is going well, other than last week in the market, but the economy has been going historically well. And with that, construction costs continue to rise big time. So there are a lot of communities that have constant issues right now with bids coming in a lot higher than what they're planning on because contractors are cherry picking in some cases, or they have the ability to charge more than they charge during recessionary times. So that is one of the big questions and why we talked about in the next few years, we're still saying that you should do a baseline inflationary increase to make sure that people are still used to inflationary increases, that if you had to up it more than 1%, then it wouldn't be too much of a hit. But we do think keeping 1% for the next few years is within all the metrics that we would look at. One of the things to see and what that actually means to a typical homeowner, now you got to be careful about, every homeowner is different. Some are going to use more than others. But your typical homeowner in terms of USDA metrics, the state metrics, it uses about 4,500 gallons per month, which is 13,500 gallons per quarter. And in the blue boxes right near the center of the page, you'll see that a 1% increase from 19 to 20 fiscal years is about $1 per month. So if you raise your rates by 1%, that typical homeowner would pay an extra $1 per month for sewer service. Really not, and most homeowners, I would think that would be well within what they would deem acceptable in terms of a sewer system increase. So that's what you're looking at on the sewer side. If you don't do any extensions, is keeping up with about 1% increases, really getting through the next couple years of capital, making sure that all the numbers that Larry and his team worked on, and I know working with him and his group, it's not that they're off, but you do have to be careful about the next couple years of capital. You're looking at those three gray boxes, and that's about $3 million of capital in the next 3 years. So we got to make sure that that comes in favorable, or at least on target, to make sure that we're within the projected expenditures that we're looking at. But if that comes in good, then we're in a position, you'll see at the very right-hand side, that we do project that 7 or so years from now, if everything else is good in terms of the capital has come on, we've done the capital at the projected costs, everything is still online with budgets and rates and all that stuff in terms of flows, then there will probably come a point where you can turn off the rate increases. But we are recommending that over the next few years to keep it at a modest increase to make sure that we're not not doing something that we would regret by turning it off too soon. So,
is that the same percentage you used for the increase in operating expense year to year?
The operating expense is actually higher. And on page 3, you can see what those are. So we went through, with some help from Mike and Cindy especially, to do a line-by-line increase. On the very right-hand side, you'll see that each of those costs on the budgets has a percentage next to them. Most of them are 2 or 3%, but the overall, I would say, is about 2.5% is the increase on the operating expenses per year.
So I think what I'm hearing you say is that we're in good enough financial shape that even with increases in inflation and increase in our costs, we can still operate below the rate of inflation benefit to our ratepayers.
Correct. Yeah.
For at least a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I would say, I mean, our typical line that we tell people is that you should be looking at this every 5 years at the bare minimum. I would say in your position, that's probably not out of the realm. I mean, there are communities that we tell, hey, you got to look at this every year because you got major problems or you got some major unknowns. But with the SAW grant and everything seems to be well known and organized right now, the finances are in really good shape. You do 1% increases for the next 5 years and you see where everything stands after 5 years with all the capital. As long as you don't get really bad bids on the capital you're in good position. So
I know with our capital improvements plan, we update it every year, so we always have five. We're always looking 5 years out. Could this tool be used in a similar way instead of waiting 5 years and then redoing it? Can you kind of revisit it and re-roll it?
I'm all about it every year, but some communities don't tell me, hey, that's not realistic for our community. That's fine, but yeah, if you're a community that does it every year and you do a 5-year projection every year, that's better than most. So, yeah. Any other questions before we move on to the next one? All right. So, in terms of sewer extensions, what this analysis is on page 6 is taking. So Larry did a workup of, and you can look at this. Anywhere where there's a numbered area, and if I remember what he said is that there is no real rhyme or reason for area 1, area 2, area 3, area 4. This is all just basically working in a logical way of filling in the city with extensions. But there's nothing saying like, oh, area 1 is a problem area, so we're going to address that before area 8. That's not the way it's set up, but he just logically went through and did all these different areas of where we could potentially fill in the city for sanitary sewer at a reasonable cost to the city. You'll see some of the boxes that say ignore on here. Basically, if he had mentioned that the cost to the city sewer fund would be too severe versus the payback potential right now for the city to entertain doing those. Those could come down the line if and when development happens. So for instance, like out in here in the more agricultural area, most likely what's going to happen with that area is that down the line a developer might develop this area and then they're going to do a special assessment on the properties or something. But the ones that we're looking to address are more the ones that are inside the city that have the potential to be a lot of customers coming on at a reasonable cost to the sewer fund. So what the sewer extension on page 6, it's the exact same analysis other than the orange boxes near the very bottom. You'll see three orange boxes over the next few years, and those are to start addressing the areas, and it is really just area. This is area 1, area 2, area 3, and the cost to get those property owners on the line. The overall is that this scenario is run to show you what is essentially the, hopefully, what is essentially the worst case scenario in terms of cost recovery. And looking at, okay, if we just decided by policy, whether it does not have to be a blanket policy forevermore, this could just be a 5-year policy to say, hey, we're looking at putting in sewer in these areas because we want to help get everybody on the line as soon as we can. That's reasonable cost. It could be a 1-year policy that you say, you look at the overall and you say, hey, area 4 has got a lot of potential. We need to get them online. This does not need to be a decision made for 100 years. It could be an every year discussion about, is the money there? Are we going to look at doing another area? This shows you that with those costs, you can still be on track to do the 1% increases per year. The one difference you can see, though, is that those are about $600,000. And when you look at that decision, it's, are you willing to take $600,000 of sewer fund monies to get those customers on the line, knowing that you're only going to recover $1,500 per customer when they choose to come online? So that's the big question. Most of the time, again, there's 100 different ways to do this. Special assessments, developers, force connections, all these different options, but most of the time when you do this approach, you would not force connection. You would build the lines, and then when those customers' septics, either by choice or by necessity, when their septics fail, then they would come on the line. So most of the time you wouldn't just say, okay, you built a line in front of these 10 parcels, you can. It is possible. It's just not typically done because of the politics behind it. But you would build the line for those 10 parcels, and then one by one over the next 20 years, those parcels will come in the line when their septics fail or they decide to get on public sewer. So,
and we have some people who are doing that right now. Because some of the areas in the city that have sewer, when they ran the sewer, they did not force people to hook up. So there were septic tanks mixed in throughout town as well. So.
Yeah. So that is really, on the sewer side, it's really a decision that does not have to be made, obviously, today or any time real in the near future, but this is something to think about in terms of how you want the city to develop in terms of the sewer system. Is would you like to take those areas that are in red and fill them in over time to make sure that we're weeding out the septics as much as we can?
Have other communities done this from a risk assessment perspective instead of just sort of numbering them off?
I would say, yeah, I would probably say if you decide to do this, if you decide to look at this in terms of we're actually considering that this is a possibility, then you'd want to work with Larry and say, okay, we need to figure out a logical way to do this, because the one hesitation that I have with telling community commissions or staff to undertake this type of program is that you have to be very careful about the optics. When you start spending sewer fund money, what is essentially other people's rate money that's been built up into a cash balance to try and get more people online, there will be some people that question you of saying, okay, why are you spending my money to get Joe's septic or Joe's sewer system when he could just pay for the pipe himself? And what you also have to be concerned about is that if you choose 1 through 10 areas, 1 through 10, how you do that, you do want to have, like you said, Dean, some sort of logical approach to that, because we have seen it before where you get questions from community, okay, why did you choose area 1 versus area 8? I'm on area 8. I need it now. If you don't get to area 8 before the time somebody's septic fails, they could potentially have to pay for a septic, and then 2 years later the pipe's being built in front of their house, and they're probably not going to be very happy about that. But that's the reality, is that this is what needs to come down if you do choose this. This is a voluntary decision by the commission. There is nothing saying that you have to do this, nor do you have to pick area 1 or area 8 to start. Purely voluntary, all you're trying to do is help people get on public sewer for health and sanitary reasons as quickly as you can. But when and if you decide to do this, you will want to work with Larry and say, okay, what's the most cost? You could do it by a cost-effective approach of saying, all right, this is the quickest payback. If we're going to have this, it's $100,000 to do this pipe and there's 10 people on it, so that's only going to be a loss of X, versus if this one's $400,000 and there's 5 people on it, that's going to be a bigger loss to the sewer fund if we do that one. There's a bunch of different ways to do it, but there will be some chosen way.
Two questions related. So I had this conversation yesterday. My taxes in the city are high, and I don't even have water and sewer. And I tell them, you're not paying for it. It's service only, correct?
Correct.
Okay. I cleared that up. Second question would be, so if we have a developer with 30 acres with water and sewer close by, 212 potential homes, would it be in our best interest to look at that as an area where we do some type of providing, because we are gaining 212 homes?
So without any knowledge about that certain area, I would say with 99% certainty, the developer needs to be assessed. The only reason that you look at doing the sewer extension program is you're trying to fill in little pockets that don't have it. If a developer is trying to make money by developing an area and sell homes at a profit, then you should not be looking at putting the sewer fund money on the line for that. They should be billing that back to the property owner.
Even if they say that the numbers don't work, and even if one of our city goals is to increase housing.
That's, I would say, the 1%. If you say that if the numbers aren't working, then that could be Area 11 that you look at and potentially say, okay, if it is our goal to get that neighborhood developed for the benefit of the city, then you could look at that scenario, yes.
But it's rare.
But it's and that is even more rare than this, because of the optics of helping development. When development, in most people's eyes, that don't, and it's, you're working with people that don't understand that they're not paying for water or sewer service out of their taxes.
Sure.
So you have to look at it from that perspective, but you're looking at it from the sense that there are going to be a lot of people, I would assume it's the most communities on the west side, there's a lot of people that would not want to have any more development because they like the west side and they like the lake. And so you're going to be working against a lot of those people that say, well, I don't want development in the city. Why are you promoting development and giving them a break? The developer should pay for that. I didn't want it in the first place. So that's it's an easier sell. And the reason why that's done a lot less than this is that once you explain it to people, and the fact that there is public health concerns that are currently present on your system with septics, it's a lot easier to do that than say, we're going to do breaks to a developer to do new sanitary sewer. Even though that could potentially cause problems if you don't, and they end up choosing the ability to do septics, that could cause you septic problems in the future. But that's the reality, is that it's the development should drive the cost. It's very rare that you would give development a break, unless there's some real push by the city to develop this area because of X. So.
Okay, good advice. Thank you.
Any questions on sewer? We can move to water. All right.
So is there some framework we should be thinking of, Mike, when you see proposing something in the near future of the policy that we might pursue? Or?
Potentially. We're just introducing this. I mean, this has all come up in the last couple months. And I've been a big proponent with regards to special assessments and things of that nature. But this is a mechanism that might allow us to deviate from that, because we have the resources, it appears.
So, switching over to water. So this was the add-on for the water side. This is not in the sewer study. A quick overview of some of the stuff that's going on the water side in Michigan. A lot of communities ask us, we get this asked at least twice a month through email or calls, is there going to be some sort of SAW grant type approach to water? Our thinking is that no, most likely not, for a couple reasons. The first one is that the ability to do a lot more intensive assessment applies to sewer. You can camera systems, you can look at manholes, you can do all this GIS stuff. For water, Mark could correct me if I'm way off here, but there's no ability to do that. They're pressurized water pipes. You can't send cameras down, you can't send people down. You can GIS them in terms of, you can look, it's a mapping of your pipes that helps you figure out for the future, okay, we have an emergency break, we got to figure out where the valve is to stop this. Well, that would help you in terms of figuring out where the geographics are, but you can't do a lot of the stuff that you can on sewer. There's also another one in terms of the water side, is that there's already been a lot of regulation, everything behind the water. So I don't think that they're going to come just offering a lot of money. They've already had, in 2017, they had the water asset management requirement for any community over 1,000 population. That's already built into yearly updates, and it will be a requirement for capital improvements and everything going forward. So I would highly doubt that since they've already had these requirements in place, post-Flint, really, that they would reset and say, okay, now that everybody is already starting to do this, now we're going to throw money at you to do it again or something. So on the water side, it really is like you've got your system, you got to maintain it, you got to, Mark and his team, and there's more and more regulations, there's more and more requirements every single year, because for better or for worse, in some cases, but the water side really is up to you. It's all your costs. There's no grants or anything right now. The one of the big things that is really not a huge issue for your community, because you've been, you were built out a lot later than most, is the lead and copper rule. So the lead and copper rule is a huge financial burden for a lot of communities. I agree with most of it, honestly. Some of it is tough because it's mostly dealing with private property. If you're familiar with it, it's basically dealing with service lines from the public pipe, what is essentially the curb stop, which is your right-of-way stop, to the house. And it's always been private property in almost in 99% of the communities. There's a couple communities that have taken easements on them, like Grand Rapids and Kalamazoo are a couple that have owned those pipes. But most communities say, hey, if that pipe breaks near your house, that's on your responsibility. That's not the public system. Lead and copper rule, I won't bore you with it all, but that is a huge problem for a lot of communities because they're having to address all these costs on the city water fund. You can't specially assess it back or anything. So that is not the case for your system. Yours was built a lot newer, my understanding, right? You don't have a lot of problems with it.
Yeah, not yet. No, we have fewer areas we got to check. We just did the project Cedar and Terrace. We had to replace 12 service lines because they had lead goosenecks at the main. So
out of how many?
Out of 43. Mark? So 12 out of 43, so not bad. We still have about 8% of the system has transite. So once we start replacing those, that may determine. We have roughly 150 houses that have the potential to have a lead gooseneck, so still on them.
So there is, I mean, there's a, the rule says that you have to prove that it's not, or that it was never. So that's going to be on Mark's team to basically prove that to Eagle, and that either replace it or prove that it never was touching lead is the rule. So if it's galvanized steel line, you can basically, I mean, you can look at somebody's, like if you're interested, you can look in your house, look at your meter and where the pipe comes into the meter. If it's copper, most likely it's good. If it's galvanized steel, you'll probably get a call from Mark here in the next few years to replace your line. So there's a, we did factor that into the discussion, so that's in the analysis. But really, your community is in a better position than a lot of them in trying to address that requirement. So let's get into, this is going to be pretty short, actually, and we'll get to the marina talk. But the water side is going to be a lot of the same discussion and same metrics. So page one, in terms of water, the top right-hand number, at the end of 2019, you had about $1 million. If you look at the 16 through 19 changes in cash and investments, you're going up almost every year. 18 to 19 was pretty static because of capital, but everything's good on, in terms of the cash. You can obviously tell when you look at the system, not as good as sewer in terms of the cash balance, but you're still in a good position financially. Going to page two, the water side, charges for services has gone up steadily every year. And at the end of 2019, the charges for services were $765,000. Going to page three, this is for your budget history. So 18 budget, 19, or 18 actual, 1920 budget on page three. The bottom right hand number that we talked about for the sewer, that was $570,000. Your water is about $100,000 less to operate. So your water total test year is $467,000. We need to bring in that on a normal year just to cover the operations on the water system. As a side note, that's typically the case for most communities. We'll talk about the what a typical rate is, but most water systems are a little bit cheaper than sewer systems, just cheaper to operate. Page 4 is your debt. So this is really, again, a lot of the stuff is actually mirroring a little bit different numbers on the water side, less numbers in most cases, but you have the same situation on water that you do on sewer, in that the water has a significant amount of debt compared to the operating expenses. I'm not saying it's too much or anything, but your debt on water is about $115,000 per year. Your operating expenses are $467,000, so you're, what's that, about like 18% or so of your budget, something like that, is paid out of is supporting the debt right now on the water side. So not as heavy as the sewer side again, but there is a significant cost that's already built into your rates on the water side, and that's going to fall off in 2023. Going, actually, I just remembered your question, Hugh, before about doing rate decreases. Before we get to the analysis here, I will say that in your situation that you have is really the only case where I've ever seen a rate decrease make that actually works, and that's if you have a large amount of debt falling off. So if you have a system that's like $500,000 of cost, for instance, and you got a $700,000 debt payment, when that debt falls off, you're most likely going to have to decrease rates unless you have another big project coming in through the door. In your case, even though it sounds like you have a lot of debt falling off, on both systems, you have a lot of capital that's filling the gaps. You can't do rate increases. I would like
rate
to say that...
increases or decreases?
Oh, you can't do rate decreases. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. I would like to say that you could, because it sounds great, but the reality is that even though you have debt that's falling off in the next 3 years on water, next 6 years on sewer, you can't do decreases because the amount of capital and expenses going up over time is just too much. It's too much on the system to handle. So I did want to address your question before we get to the water. So on the water side, on page 5, we're anticipating the same percentage increase to the water side, and really that's for the foreseeable future. The water side is not in as good a position financially as sewer. It's still in a good position, like I said, but there are some unknowns with the lead and copper rule, which is again estimated in this analysis. But with that, other capital improvements, and the fact that we're not as well off on the water side cash and investments, the 1% is projected to go forward for the foreseeable future. So 2019-20, let's talk about the current real quick. Your ready-to-serve charge on water is $32.75. Going down, the next yellow box you'll see is $2.78. That's your usage fee on water. Your typical homeowner is $70.28 per quarter, which is about $23 and change per month. On the water side, just as I talked about on the operational side, we see a typical medium range for water bills is $30 to $50 per month. So it's the same thing as sewer, just take off $5. So being that you're at about $23 and change for the water, a typical homeowner on water, you are well into the low range for typical homeowner fee on water systems. And that really, you're not going to get there unless something drastic happens for... I mean, you can see that even with 1% increases for the next 10 years, you're only going to get up to a typical homeowner of about a little over $25, $26 per month. So your water fund, although it's not doing as well in the cash and investments, is in a really good position financially in the sense that you have extremely low rates and everything is in really good position cash flow-wise. So... moving down the line on the 2019-20 column, your total revenues in purple is $700,000. We talked about your operating expenses of about $470,000. Your net operating revenue is just over $230,000, and your debt is $115,000. That's completely supported by the city. No Boyne Mountain reimbursement on the water side. So once the debt falls off, You'll have $200,000 or so in a given year to fund capital. What you'll see is that in the next few years, bar 1 year, the gray box and going over on the lines from here on out, we're anticipating about $100,000 a year for capital improvements on water, lead and copper rule, other improvements. And that's really going to be it. There's actually 150 built in there, too. I didn't see that in 24, 25. But relatively speaking, it's pretty stable from what we see on the water side. That's hopefully taking everything into account that we could possibly think of and keeping 1% increases, which is less than a dollar per month on water.
Is there a reason why you were able to look out farther on water than sewer?
The sewer actually goes out farther. So the final report, you'll see it actually is a 20-year report. But for today's purposes, the sewer one is 0% from there on out, so I didn't think it was too important to talk about with it. But they both, the final reports will both be 20 years. So. That's it really on water. Any questions on the water side?
I got a question in regards to our readers. Where, as far as the efficiency of them reading, I mean, we've got probably 70 or 80% covered now in the city where they're installed.
No, we are probably at about just over a third. We're trying to get them in. Our biggest issue has been getting into the houses. We've sent out, we put 200 door knockers on and get 3 responses. Sent out every quarterly newsletter. You know, call us if you're getting estimated or if you have an old meter, but we're not getting any response. We're going to have to somehow, I don't know how we, force people to let us in their house.
I was just thinking about whether the cash flow would be improved if we were up at 70 or 80 or 100%.
I don't know. Most of the time, though, actually, when we replace the meters, when we do get a chance to do them, it's minimal what the difference is.
So our from estimations what they've been. Have been pretty good.
Yes, they have. Yep.
The real efficiency that's gained is the staff time having to take to go out and read meters.
It. Yeah.
That's why I keep pushing to try and get it done.
I thought we were further along on that. We've been working on it for 10 years.
Oh, more than that, Ron.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So, take a break or move on to Marina?
Sure.
What do we want to do?
Take a quick break.
Good break.
Good break.
At 25 after. Got 3 minutes.